So we're going to spend a bit of time in Matthew 26, so you can keep that open for now. As you may have remembered from the announcements, we're doing some Bible classes right now on preparation. And I had did the first of those three classes on Wednesday. And on the way home, Robin, who I dearly love, said to me, "Okay, Dad, pretty good class, but you really didn't say what preparation was for, right? You talked about preparation, so I thought, okay, nice job, Eric, you know. Whole first class, didn't even really talk about the whole purpose of preparation. So, but we are going to talk about that in a way today, what the purpose is of our preparation now. And we're going to do that by really looking at Christ's experience with the disciples in the Garden of Gethsemane. You know, we know that God expects more of us than just to save ourselves, right? Just to be about our own working out our own salvation. We know we're supposed to do that, and we're probably pretty familiar with that passage in second chapter of Philippians, that we are to work out our own salvation with fear and trembling, right? That is what we need to be doing. And yet, God really wants us to do more, but it's so hard to do. Sometimes working out our own salvation with our God is all that we can seem to manage to do. It's a lot to try to stay faithful and keep listening to God's word and be focused on addressing those parts of us that really need to change. That's hard enough. And yet we are commanded to do more than that. And hopefully, as we look at how Jesus handled himself with his disciples in that most difficult time for him, we'll take some instruction and some comfort. Now, as we read in the 26th chapter of Matthew, Jesus comes down off of the Mount of Olives, where he had just given some pretty significant prophecies, some pretty significant messages to his disciples. And when you think about it, when he sits down at the Last Supper, this really would have been the last time he would have been with his 12 disciples, at least the last time in peace with them. Of course, when Judas comes to leading the band to arrest him, they all would have been there. But obviously that would have been a very different time. The Last Supper was really the last time where he was going to have a meal with them and be able to talk with them, preach to them, encourage them. And so this was a significant moment for Christ with his disciples. As he leaves the supper, Judas is gone already, right? Judas has taken the bread from Jesus. He's gone off to get the to get things going for his arrest. And so as Jesus leaves that Last Supper, he's now down to 11. And he had spent the better part of 3.5 years with these 12 disciples. In verse 31, we see that Jesus predicts for them that they would all be scattered by the end of the night. Peter can't bear to contemplate that this was in fact true. He denies it twice. "I will never disown you." The other disciples hearing this can't imagine how this would be true. And they seem to sort of chime in whether they had the same conviction that Peter had or not. Hard to know. But here all of them are saying to Jesus, "No, we wouldn't do that to you. We're going to stay with you. We would not disown you in that kind of a way." So Jesus takes the 11 back up the Mount of Olives to the Garden of Gethsemane. And he starts out by separating his disciples yet again. And so he goes a little further into the garden with Peter, James, and John. And then at some point he separates himself from them and goes on a stone's throw away. And now he's just by himself. So we can see that he went from having 12 disciples down to 11, and then separated down to the three. And then, in the end, it's just him by himself praying in, as we know, a most intense and urgent time for him. In addition to what we see in Matthew about what Christ experienced there, the Mark passage adds in that he was deeply distressed and troubled. His soul is overwhelmed, the Matthew account says, overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. And I wonder if you've ever thought about why that was. Why was he overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death? In some ways, it's a little bit perplexing because I think we can understand that he would have been fearful to the point of death. We can relate to that. If you knew that you were headed to your crucifixion, you would be fearful. So we know that had to be there. But that's not what the record says. It says that he was overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death. Now, Jesus had just predicted to his disciples that they would all fall away. Was he sad for himself? To lose his disciples? To lose their companionship? That they were going to, in fact, leave him? As this unfolded, I think he wouldn't be human if he wasn't going to have some of that experience. I think it was sad for him to be by himself and to imagine that they weren't going to, in fact, be with him. But I think it's more than that. I think he was sorrowful for them. I think he knew that this was going to be a challenge that they were going to fail at. And that he was concerned for them. If we go back in our minds and think about some of the things he said to them, it was just those important last messages he wanted them to try to grasp. He was trying to get them to get ready. In the garden, he's saying to them, "Watch with me, watch with me, so you don't fall into temptation." Jesus knows that every one of them was going to face the trial of their life in just a few short hours. And that's why he asked them to keep watch with him. But how hard it was for the disciples to stay awake. They could scarcely understand what was going to happen next. They were struggling to really grasp what Jesus was saying, even though he was being very plain with them, saying, the Passover is 2 days away. The Son of Man will be handed over to be crucified. But it was so hard for them to actually absorb the reality of that message. And they were tired. It was probably late in the day. And they were sitting there in the quiet of that garden as Jesus was again, you know, no farther away than the end of this parking lot, just kneel down in prayer. And they just couldn't stay awake. We know, brethren, that Jesus is asking us to do the same thing, right? He's asking us to stay awake during this time. He's asking us to not fall asleep and to be just resting or not being alert for his return. We know that's something that he asks us to do. Can we do it? Well, physically we can, yeah. Will we do it? That's the tough part, isn't it? And that's the tough part for me and I think for all of us. Will we do it? Or will we be weighed down by the cares that we struggle with every day, the stresses of this world, just getting tired in our discipleship, walking and not having Christ return as we want him to return? Maybe we'll also fall into temptation, our bodies being too weak and not matching our willing spirit. And this is what Jesus said of the disciples: "I know your spirit's willing, it's your flesh that's weak." So we have to ask ourselves that question, and I think honestly we know that we betray our Lord in that kind of a way when we don't stay awake, when we don't stay alert to our relationship with him and our watching and waiting for him. Now, in the coming kingdom, we hope to be of some useful service to our master. We want to be one of those servants who, when our master returns, finds us working productively on his behalf. And how tragic it would be if you think about Christ coming back and you and I being involved in something else, right? What a sad moment that would be for Christ to come and looking for us and to find us somewhere else, doing something else, being distracted with something else, and really not being prepared and not focused on his return. That would be tragic. By the time that Jesus comes back the third time to his disciples, it is a sad picture at that point. We know he was deep in prayer. He was in agony. The sweat, even though it was at night, the sweat was dropping from his face. And not because it was hot out, because he was in just tremendous emotional stress and agony at that point. His prayers would have been just filling his mind. This was not a quiet place when he was deep in prayer. He gets up from prayer, comes back now the third time after finding the disciples asleep again and again. He comes back and the garden is silent. It would have been a very lonely place to have been for Christ at that point. He's there, no other human to share the struggle that he was going through, to share the fear or the sadness that he was experiencing. He knew that he had this persecution and trials ahead of him. But of course, he wasn't completely alone because God was with him. And in the account in Luke, we read in chapter 22, verse 43, that even though the disciples couldn't stay with him to support him, God sent his angel to strengthen him. And so I've kind of wondered as myself, what did the angel say? What did the angel do when the angel came to visit him in that intense hour? And, you know, I think it can be easy to be critical of the disciples and say, you know, couldn't you have just done this for him? But we know that we would have been, I think we know we would have been the same way. We wouldn't have done any better than they did. We would have been tired. We would have been stressed. We would have been thinking about all kinds of other things. We would have had difficulty grasping the reality of what was happening to Christ at that point as well. So I think we have to be humble about that and recognize that just as they struggled, we do as well. So here's Jesus in the garden praying, as hard as he ever had, I'm sure. And the angel comes to him. What I imagine the angel saying at that point to him is really just a simple answer to the question that Jesus had in his mind and what he had brought up. He had just said twice, we read it in the Matthew passage, he had said, "My Father, if it's possible, may this cup be taken from me. Not my will, but your will." He was willing if that couldn't happen, but he asked that, and then he asked that again. "My Father, if it is not possible for this cup to be taken away unless I drink it, may your will be done." And to me, again, I'm just guessing here, but to me, I imagine the angel answering that question in a compassionate kind of way, bringing the Father's voice to him in a tangible way in that garden. "No, this cup is yours. This cup has been yours from the beginning. It's the new covenant in your blood. Don't be afraid. I will sustain you when you're weak. And I will watch over your flock until you rise from the dead." And then the record says, being in anguish, he prayed even the more earnestly. I really wish that someone had been there for him, right? I know it was sufficient to have God send an angel to be there with him, but I just wish for because I just feel that, I guess, just sense of compassion for what Christ was going through, I wish that we, as the disciples, could have been there for him, and that we could have been there to just watch with him. It was a simple thing he asked for. I wish that they would have done it, and I wish that we would do it, that we wouldn't leave him, but that we would stay with him. You know, I think about it like a parent and a child. Parents don't need their children in order to live, right? We find a way to move on, whether we have our children or not. But we want our children, right? We love them and we want to be with them. And I think this is the same thing with Christ. He didn't need the disciples to be there in that sense, clearly, because they weren't there. And he did withstand that. And the strength that God gave him and the strength that God gave him through the angel was sufficient. So he didn't need it in the absolute sense. But I can't imagine that he didn't want it. And that I imagine that he wants the same thing from us. He wants us to watch with him and stay awake and stay with him and not, you know, turn ourselves aside from him for whatever reason. So we are doing our best to prepare ourselves to be there for our bridegroom when he comes. And again, mostly, I think if we're honest, it's as much as we can do to take care of ourselves half the time. But I think this is our opportunity to encourage ourselves to do more than just that, to really try to do what Jesus was asking the disciples to do, and what he's asking us to do more than just attend to our own salvation. And Jesus is our example. What did he do on the way to the cross, despite having been scourged and being in pain and all the stress and strain that was upon him in that time? He prayed for the daughters of Jerusalem. And on the cross, despite the tremendous agony he was going through, he took care of John. He took care of his mother. He prayed for the soldiers and the Jewish leaders. He preached to the two thieves next to him on the cross. And in his final effort to try to show that it was God's plan what was happening, that this was the cup prepared from the beginning of time for him, that this was not some new thing that was happening, he started out reciting Psalm 22, my God, why have you forsaken me? And then he just couldn't say anything else. I think this is in some ways, the greatest task for us is to try to be there for our Lord. He wants us, like a parent wants a child. He wants us. And that's, I think, our greatest challenge. In Timothy, Paul speaks to Timothy about preparing himself. And he says, in a large house there are articles not only of gold and silver, but also of wood and clay, some for special purposes and some for common use. Those who cleanse themselves from the latter, from the wood and clay, will be instruments for special purposes, made holy, useful to the master, and prepared to do any good work. That is our task of preparation, to cleanse ourselves from the common and make ourselves, by God's influence in our life, into special instruments for his special work. To be set apart and made holy and to be useful to Christ when he comes. When he comes to set up the kingdom, there's going to be a lot to do, and he's going to want to have us there, ready, prepared, watching, and useful for his work. That's a tremendous goal that we should have for ourselves. And imagine how loved and honored Christ will feel when he comes back and sees us prepared and finds us waiting and finds us ready for action and ready to be put to work in some way that he would want to use us. And so now we try to prepare ourselves to be the strongest disciples, even in our weakness, to be as humble as we can before Him and the most ready that we can before Him. Who did He lavish praise on in the parable about the sheep and goats? It's to those who loved Him by loving others. That's the way we can be prepared. It's to those who clothed Jesus by clothing others, fed Him by feeding others. And in the context of His being in the garden, it was to those who visited those in their darkest hour, right? Who visited those in prison. There can't be anything worse than to be in prison. And so Jesus was saying, if you are a person who stays with and visits in the darkest hour, then you're doing that for Me. So our hours are short before His return, one way or the other. And so my hope is that we can stay focused on watching for His appearing, and we can prepare ourselves and just be with Him in the garden. I think that's our task this morning, is to do what He asked us to do, to watch with Him.